Welcome to The Week, the weekly news podcast from The Scientist. This edition of The Week is sponsored by Invitrogen. Get free access to more than 900 of John Wiley & Son's current protocols, supporting documentation and related Invitrogen products at the iProtocol online library. Visit www.invitrogen.com/iProtocol. This week, two stories from the Scientist Daily News, one on the future of the first avian flu vaccine for humans, and another one on the first report of using RNAi in monkeys. Then, editor Richard Gallagher handicaps the boxing match between Nature and Encyclopedia Britannica. First, Clementine Wallace reports that scientists say it is unlikely that the developed world will soon benefit from Hungary's recent decision to commercialize the first H5N1 vaccine for humans, which has already captured the interest of some countries. While the World Health Organization calls the early data encouraging, researchers describe them as too limited and preliminary to determine whether or not the vaccine works. "It's very hard to assess when you don't have more information," William Schaffner from the Vanderbilt University School of Medicine in Nashville, Tennessee, told the Scientist. "A lot is missing from the data. They still seem to be at very early stages." The vaccine was initially developed in September 2005 by Hungary's National Center of Epidemiology, now collaborating with local company Omnivest to produce 500,000 doses a week, according to Klaus Stohr, who coordinates with the WHO Global Influenza Program. Hungary presented encouraging preliminary findings during a WHO meeting last November. During a study, Hungarian scientists combined 30 micrograms of the whole H5N1 virus with the conventional adjuvant alum. In the trial, 146 volunteers received the H5N1 virus inoculation, and blood samples were collected 1, 3, and 6 months after vaccination. In the publicly released data, the number of seroconversions after 21 days reached 63%. Exceeding the target of 40%. The mean geometric increase of the hemagglutination inhibition, HI, titers also suggested the vaccine was offering some protection. However, the proportion of subjects achieving an HI titer was only 63%, less than the expected 70%. The researchers have also not yet released 90-day and 180-day serological analysis, which measure the vaccine's long-lasting effects. Omnivest spokesperson Zalst Nemeth noted that the vaccine should work fine if at least one of the above three values, number of seroconversions, mean geometric increase of HI titers, and the proportion of subjects achieving an HI titer, meets expectations. However, Schaffner noted that meeting one expectation is not enough. "In the U.S., we would not just be satisfied with achieving just one of these specifications, but all of them." He added that there are many missing details, such as the age limit of study participants and their immunocompetence. Faced with such limited information, representatives at institutions such as the Center for Disease Control and the National Institute of Health told the Scientist that staff scientists did not feel comfortable commenting on the effectiveness of the vaccine. Ian Gust from the University of Melbourne in Australia told the Scientist that the Hungarians employed a method that most of the developed world has not used in at least 40 years. "This is a relatively crude process that was associated with a lot of reactions in people who received the vaccine in the past," he said. "I don't think developed countries would revert to this." Most of the developed world's manufacturers are working on H5N1 vaccines, containing split and whole viruses, but are using more sophisticated production processes. Gust added that many aspects of the Hungarian vaccine remain a mystery. "The data currently available is too limited, and as far as I know, there hasn't been any independent tests made by an outside laboratory." Schaffner suggested it is unlikely that the U.S. would be interested in the vaccine based on the current public information, despite the fact that it has captured the interest of some countries, including Romania. He added that the vaccine may be more attractive to Eastern European countries, some of which can't produce a vaccine themselves. "It might be attractive for them to go for a manufacturer that's local, probably less expensive and quick," he said. Next, Charles Choi writes on the first report on RNAi in monkeys. a disease-causing gene was silenced in monkeys through RNA interference, RNAi, therapy, delivered into the bloodstream, scientists reported online this week in Nature. This is the first study to show that systemic administration of RNAi works in non-human primates, and the findings affirm the promise of this new type of therapy, scientists say. In the study, gene silencing using the highest dose persisted for 11 days without any observed toxicity, a finding that bodes well for future human systemic trials of RNAi therapies. John Rossi of the Beckman Research Institute of the City of Hope in Duarte, California, who did not participate in this study, told the scientist. Scientists at Alnylam Pharmaceuticals and Proteva Biotherapeutics gave cynomolgus monkeys a single injection of small interfering RNAs, siRNAs, against the gene for apolipoprotein B, APOB. This gene is involved in the assembly and secretion of low-density lipoprotein, LDL, and has not proven accessible to targeting with conventional small molecule or protein therapies. The researchers encapsulated the siRNAs in a liposomal formulation designed to target the liver and modified their backbones to prevent siRNA degradation. Gene silencing occurred in a dose-dependent manner. Within 48 hours, the maximum level of APOB silencing exceeded 90%, with more than 75% reduction in plasma APOB and more than 80% drop in LDL. The researchers detected no reduction with empty liposomes or those containing mismatched siRNA. Using 5-foot rapid amplification of cDNA ends, RASE, analysis, the scientists confirmed that silencing occurred via APOB-mRNA cleavage at precisely the predicted site. APOB-mRNA levels were substantially reduced for at least 11 days, a silencing effect far more persistent than results previously obtained with rodents, which suggested APOB-mRNA levels would recover within 4 to 7 days. Alnylam President and Chief Executive Officer John Maraganore said that metabolic differences between rodents and primates may explain why silencing persisted longer in this study. The researchers saw no evidence of toxicity, such as pro-inflammatory cytokine production, a finding Maraganore attributed to in vitro toxicity screening beforehand and to the siRNA backbone modifications. The only detected change was a fleeting increase in liver enzymes in monkeys that received the high dose of the liposome-encased anti-APOB siRNAs, which peaked 48 hours after treatment and varied highly across individual animals. These effects normalized by the sixth day and did not interfere with biological efficacy. The researchers ended their study after 11 days because the durability of the silencing far exceeded what we expected, Maraganore told the scientist. They plan to continue longer-term experiments in primates and improve the liposome formulations. Still, Maraganore said he believes they are ready for human clinical trials within the next 18 to 24 months. However, scientists cautioned many details of the therapy should be investigated further. The data is all from a single dosing, and it is going to be important to determine what happens after multiple dosing, as will be required for chronic liver problems, Rossi cautioned. While the liposome vectors the researchers used are most effective in delivery to the liver, they could also investigate whether the liposomes can deliver siRNAs to different targets, such as the kidneys or lungs, Rossi added. Investigation should also tease apart how necessary the backbone modifications are to the therapy's effectiveness. Martin Woodle at RNAi therapeutic company Intradyme in Rockville, Maryland, who did not participate in the study, told the scientist, "Nanoparticle and liposomal systems are now quite well accepted and very successful without invoking the need for chemical modifications of the siRNAs themselves," he said. Future research should also investigate whether systemic delivery localizes siRNAs selectively to the liver, or if the silencer reaches other organs as well, Woodle added. Finally, the scientist's editor Richard Gallagher interprets a skirmish between two publishing heavyweights as Howard Cosell might have.
Roll up for the public battering of the publishing heavyweights. In the red corner, from London, England, the world's top multidisciplinary science journal, namely Nature. And in the blue corner, from Chicago, Illinois, the world's oldest continuously published reference work in the English language, namely Encyclopaedia Britannica. Round one, ding ding. Nature lands the opening blow with a news article on December the 14th that compared the accuracy of science coverage from Encyclopaedia Britannica with that of Wikipedia. Their conclusion was this. There are numerous errors in both encyclopedias, but the difference in accuracy was not particularly great. This has got to hurt Encyclopaedia Britannica. They're chock full of errors and no better than a free upstart that anyone can write for. This was of sufficient interest for us to write about in the February issue of The Scientist. Round two. Nature was apparently stung because, without saying who told them to, a week after publication they provided supplementary information and they admit that no test is perfect and we acknowledge that any of our reviewers could themselves have made occasional errors. Interesting. Round three. Encyclopaedia Britannica puts together a devastating combination of blows on March the 22nd. For a summary of this all-out attack, listen to this. Almost everything about the journal's investigation, from the criteria for identifying inaccuracies to the discrepancy between the article text and its headline, was wrong and misleading. Nature's credibility has got to be hit hard here. After all, they're a major peer-reviewed journal. Encyclopaedia Britannica made a further claim, namely this. Contrary to the usual practice of making all data freely available in order to facilitate a study's replication by others, Nature declined our repeated requests to make the full reports available. Round four. Nature had to respond, and they did the next day. They came out off the ropes with a press release allegedly penned by the editor that rejected the Encyclopaedia Britannica accusation, stating that we are confident our comparison was fair. They also characterised the publication of the open letter by Encyclopaedia Britannica as a low blow. Clearly, at this point, Nature's down in points, but they remain defiant, or defiant-ish. Their missive closed with the strangely worded, "We do not intend to retract our article." Round five is eagerly awaited. It could get bloody, and I'll keep you up to date.
Join us online at www.the-scientist.com for more of the Scientist Daily News, blogs on current events, controversies and conferences, and features from our March print edition. This edition of The Week was brought to you by Invitrogen. Get free access to more than 900 of John Wiley & Son's current protocols, supporting documentation and related Invitrogen products at the iProtocol online library. Visit www.invitrogen.com/iProtocol.